man. I gotta say, like, having portrayed Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, the voice is something that you really have to get down, right? Like, the booming voice, the boisterous voice, right?
You do. That's a lot of vocal work, you know, and I was stuck in Muhammad Ali's cadence for about a year after doing that production. Everything was in rhymes, and that very sort of melodic way in which he spoke.
You know, if you want to lose your money, be a fool and bet on Sonny.
That sort of thing, right? And so,
So then you must have been fun to be around after you rapped on that role. How would you explain it? Like, how would you explain Muhammad Ali's cadence, though? Because it is a lot of rhyming, but there's a lyrical beat to it almost.
There is, yeah. You know, he's from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, his specific cadence is very unique to him. And because there's so much footage of him that exists in the world, I was able to just hone in, listen to it. They even have, like, Spotify playlists of just famous things that he would say, right, speeches and that sort of thing. So I keep going repeat, and I let it play all day, just about every day while I was in prep for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime I'm on the subway, I'm just listening to Muhammad Ali, you know, rhyming and doing his poetry.
When you're living in the skin of a man that is a legend, an icon, what's something that you take away from that? How did that influence your life after the fact? Did like a little bit of him get like seep into your bones?
I think with most great roles that people get to play, I think a bit of it does stick with you. I think a lot of what you're able to portray on stage also has to come from some part within you that may already exist. Insofar as his life goes, I mean, there's a lot of extremely admirable qualities about Muhammad Ali that, you know, I can only hope to try to emulate. You know, him standing up for Vietnam, him standing up for black people in this country. I think, you know, now in hindsight, folks have accepted him in this sort of reverential position, whereas back in the day, you know, he was a pariah when he first came out. People hated him. You know, a large part of America hated Muhammad Ali. But only looking back and seeing where we were and where we should have been, I think folks are now at the place now where, you know, we revere him.
Yeah.
And for a lot of things, and rightfully so. But he was also a human being. That's one of those things that he himself, you know, if he was still around today, would probably tell you, like, he made his fair share of mistakes, but ultimately, you know, we try to do more good than bad, and hopefully the rest will, you know, history will write itself.
What about finding the humanity? I mean, because then, of course, you have done these Shakespearean characters. You've been in Macbeth, you've been in King Lear. Those are the two that I'm thinking of right now. But finding the humanity in those Shakespearean characters, how do you kind of go about that? What has been your approach to those characters? Has it been a challenge to making them fresh, making them relevant, and finding that humanity, that modern humanity in those characters?
I think Shakespeare is one of the greatest writers of the human condition, period, right? I think the toughest things for folks, the toughest thing for folks is just the language, right? I found myself in great positions where, you know, we've done more modernized versions of these shows. And, you know, when you do it in modern day garb and people are seeing physical gestures that they recognize in, you know, our everyday existence, you'll understand that the words and the emotion and the passion is exactly the same today as it would have been back in Shakespeare's day. You know, if I were to tell you, hey, listen, this above all to thine own self be true, today that'd be the same thing as me saying, you know, you do you, right? You do you. And so we understand what that is. It's just getting that ear tuned to it. So Shakespeare, by far and away, I think any writer would tell you, probably the greatest writer of anything involving the human condition and the human spirit.
And I'm going to throw the question starting over here in a second, but kind of transitioning into the superhero world, it is something that Zack Snyder's talked about as far as superheroes are sort of the modern Greek pantheon or sort of modern pantheon of gods, but there's also a lot of comparison to Shakespearean characters. Do you agree with that, or as someone that is classically trained but obviously has now done the superhero stuff, like, do you think that superheroes are Shakespearean in nature, these origin stories, these rise and falls, or do you think there is a clear separation?
I think they're similar just in how we tell stories, right? Shakespeare has shaped the way in which we, I mean, tell stories, period, especially things that are being performed. You look at any piece of modern film or TV, what have you, you can probably find a Shakespeare play that follows that, that has that same sort of trajectory. And I think the same is true for the comparison that people make with Greek mythology and these heroes, especially DC heroes, because those are like almost like beat for beat, stroke for stroke, characters or Greek gods that you would see, right? Wonder Woman, obviously, on that the Hera or Athena side.
Right.
Man, Zeus, Batman, you compare him to Hades, Aquaman, Poseidon, Flash, Hermes, Cyborg, Hephaestus, and what have you.
Yeah.
You know, it, you can see those parallels very clearly drawn. And so that is what I find super exciting about this stuff, because there's so much history to dig into, not just with the characters themselves, but what they represent.
Big Stone is definitely like a Shakespearean character.
One trillion percent, yeah. And I think the sort of Greek tragedy, the tragic nature of Victor Stone and the sort of finding his humanity again, right? Ultimately, and especially in Zack Snyder's Justice League, we see him go through this crazy transformation. I mean, he goes there and then back again. You know, he's essentially taken out of this world and has to regain his humanity. And hopefully by the time people are done watching the film, you get to see a little hint of that recovery process starting to take place, right? As he's, spoiler alert for those of you who have not seen the movie yet, you should have seen it already, but...
I think we're past
that. We're past that point? Six months is enough?
Yeah.
Okay. I think for folks that watch the film, I think you get to see in a very clear way something that is very recognizable with the human condition, right? You've got a person who undergoes this tragic circumstance who could easily go to the dark side, if you would. But at the end of the day, he's able to, through the help of his friends and his circumstances, he's able to pull himself up out of that pit of despair and sort of reaffirm his place in the world. Yeah. Start that healing process.
And yet you were doing it in green or gray pajamas, I guess. I was on the set for Justice League and I saw the scene, which was your entrance on the rooftop in Gotham City, Zach directing, J.K. Simmons as Gordon, and then you arrive. And it's a really cool scene, but you're doing it in the pajamas, you know? It was a cozy outfit, right?
It was cozy, too cozy in certain places. You know what I mean? I had a good time with it just because it was comfortable. It allowed me the mobility to do what I wanted to do, right? I wasn't as confined as some of my co-stars. But it does leave a lot to the imagination while you're in the mix with it.
Yeah.
It did take some getting used to, especially the eyepiece that we would have over top. But by the time we were done, it was like second nature, right? And so we went back to shoot the, you know, little two-minute thing for the additional photography for Zack Snyder's Justice League, putting the headset back on, the new headset, getting everything back on after years of not wearing it. It was like, oh yeah, this is a whole thing.
Yeah.
It was like instantly transported back to those times.
Well, you look cozy anyhow in the pajamas, but... let's throw it to audience question. Let's start over here on the left. Hi.
What character would you want to play in Justice League if you didn't play Cyborg, and why?
What character in the Justice League movie specifically, or any character that's ever been in the Justice League?
Any character.
Okay. You know, I think the Flash would be cool. I see there's some Flash fans here.
Yeah.
I think he has a lot of fun, and also the way in which his powers work. I like Cyborg's powers because there really is no cap, there's no limit to it. I also like the Flash's powers because they're not fully understood just yet, and, you know, crazy stuff happens.
Thank you.
Cool, thank you.
Hello,
we're here.
Hello, what up, Ray? Also, hi, Aaron, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good.
My question, I was curious to know, like, any other characters in, like, literature or theater that helped influence your portrayal of Cyborg?
Well, I drew a lot of inspiration from Cyborg himself, but particularly the earlier rendition of Cyborg, like the original Teen Titans from Marv Wolfman and George Perez's 1980 run. That is where I drew a lot of the inspiration for the emotional life of the character, and they had drawn it out so clearly, and I think so in such a deep way that all we had to do is not say copy paste, but you know, you feel a lot of that same sort of emotionality behind the character. I know Chris Terrio, who wrote the film, was like, he was reading everything. You know, anything that you can sort of work in, anything that could lead to the inspiration, you could definitely consult the comics first, because that's essentially like your Bible when you're looking at material like this. So it's cool to be able to pick and choose what you want to use for whatever renditions, and leave behind what doesn't. So
thank you.
Howdy.
Hey, Rick. So I was going to actually ask you a question about what it was like portraying Ali, but you answered it in the beginning, so thank you for that. Now, I'm going to ask you a question I usually always...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
To ask fellow actors, which one do you perform? I'm sorry, which one do you prefer when it comes to performing, film or theater?
That's a good question. I think they're different disciplines, and for me, I like to mix it up. So, you know, whenever I'm doing a film, I don't ever want to watch films. I'm like, I want to watch theater. Whenever I'm doing theater, I'm like, I want to watch films. I don't want to watch theater. I want to watch films. The energy that you get from a live audience, right, not knowing what's going to happen in a room, in a space, is something that you really can't replicate. I don't think you'll ever get that in film, because it's such a it's a sort of safer process, right? That variable, there's no wild card outside of just how wacky it is to shoot a film in general. But with film, you do get the opportunity to make sure that you can get it as close to right or as close to what it should be as possible. So they're sort of different beasts. I'm definitely chomping at the bit to do a play, and I think part of it is us not necessarily being able to be in the same physical space as much, just because of everything that's happening in the world right now. So, you know, when it's safe to do so, I definitely would love to be back on stage.
Awesome. Thank you.
And any show that you're in particular wanting to do?
I actually don't know. I have no clue. I'm usually the guy that's like, when I read it, when I know it, I'll see it. You know, I don't think it would be anything classic to start. And maybe I'd love to do a new play, something contemporary.
Hello.
Hi there. I just have a question for you. You know, with everything that's gone on, with you being in, obviously, the original theatrical release and then the Snyder Cut, we love everything that you brought to the character Cyborg, and we're so glad your character got justice. And the fans were really the ones that were moving the release, the Snyder Cut movement. And we would support you, and obviously, we know it's true, the movie speaks for itself.
So, thank you.
Absolutely, man. So I want to ask the question, what can we, the fans, help do to get you back with the Snyder Cut, with the rest of the Snyder Cut?
That's a complicated question. I think ultimately, you know, how people spend their money determines what happens and what does not happen in this business, and particularly in comic books and in DC and all of that. For me, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Obviously, I've not been shy about talking about all the things that have occurred over the last year, and the back and forth that I've had personally and publicly with Warner Brothers Pictures, Walt Ramada, and the rest of the crew over there. For me, I think it all starts with an apology coming from the Warner Brothers side of things. There's a lot of this really gnarly stuff that has gone down, especially publicly. You know, what Walter Hamada and Warner Brothers Pictures attempted to do professionally and personally during one of the most crucial years for black people in the history of really humanity is just unacceptable. So until such time where an apology is issued, I probably won't be supporting any of Walter Hermann production, period. I definitely will not be supporting any Walter Hermann production, period. And it's a tough thing because I'm a DC fan through and through. I love these characters. But sometimes, you know, you gotta give up what you love to do what's right. And so I'm gonna keep doing it. And I appreciate you.
Well, you talked a little bit about this, and I don't want to like make the panel only about this, but I do have to commend you as a person and as a performer for standing up and talking about things that the ways that you were wronged. And it's so easy when you're in entertainment or in any job to just stay quiet and try to be a good soldier and move forward. I guess my question is, what forged that tenacity and bravery to speak up, to talk about these things? Was it upbringing? Was it stage experience of playing people like Ali? Was it, what kind of forged that?
I think it's a combination of things. And I do gotta say, you know, my experience is not the only one that has been involved in this whole process, you know. There are a lot of other folks, some who have spoken up, some who have yet to do so, may not ever, whose lives have been affected by this whole circumstance. And ultimately, I know I've certainly been a face of speaking out about this kind of stuff, but there are a lot of folks, a ton of really brave folks that have lent their voices to, you know, to the cause. And, you know, I got to commend Charisma Carpenter, I gotta commend, you know, anybody who's spoken up about these sorts of things, you know, whenever they've spoken up about them. For me personally, I just don't like bullies, particularly in the workplace. I never have. And if some of the folks on the other side about it to get to know me a little bit better, they probably would have understood that, you know, that's not something I would ever stand for. For me, it's not about, let me backtrack for just a second here. Had I known the things in 2016 that I found out in 2020 about the production process, we would have got this resolved a long time ago. You know, ultimately it's finding out about the things and, you know, asking yourself, well, what are you gonna do about it? You know, how do you plan on sleeping at night? And how are you gonna prevent or attempt to prevent these things from happening to other people, you know, if you got the power to do it. So I think a lot of things, and I gotta thank my mom, I gotta thank my grandma. My grandma's one of the most tenacious, and she's probably one of the bravest people I've ever met. You know, she took on the whole United States government at one point, you know, it was like, I definitely get my fighting spirit from her. But I'm blessed. I've been blessed to have really great friends, really great family, a really great support system, and obviously the fans that have helped to lift the message, and to really have my back on that. You're looking at a guy that doesn't have a PR person. You're looking at a guy who is just a dude using Twitter every now and then to try to get the truth out. And it's, you know, everybody out here who has helped to propel that message to make it completely unavoidable for folks. So, thank you. Thank you, guys.
When all is said and done, would you still have an interest in playing Victor Stone again?
Oh, absolutely. In a heartbeat. I think for me, the circumstances would have to be right. Finding the right story for the character, right? One of the big things in talking to Zack Snyder initially about, you know, joining up on the DC side of things was this idea that there was a greater plan in mind for where the character, where the universe would go. I'm not really interested personally in sort of just spinning the wheels and having it be a sort of sitcom situation, right? I'd like the character to be able to evolve in ways that we can recognize over the course of the films. And I think just that seed of, you know, I'm not broken and I'm not alone, Victor going from point A to not even necessarily point B at the end of the film, maybe he's like point A2 or point A3. You know, watching that character and being able to build a character over a series of films is something that really, really appeals to me. So I would do it in a heartbeat. Just get me a good story and, you know, let's get some of that other stuff resolved and we'll make it happen.
All right.
Lucas. So, before I ask my question, I just wanted to make a real quick statement about the that film that we're talking about right now. I confess that I'm more of a sci-fi fan, and I've always sort of been a fair weather Marvel fan. I haven't seen all the movies, but never been a comic person.
That's okay, we're DC, so it's all good.
My wife's, see, there you go. My wife is the comic nerd. But so coming into the movie, I'd never seen anything about Cyborg. I didn't know anything about the character at all. And I saw the Snyder version first. So, and then I went back. And frankly, not only were you wrong, but the fans were wrong, because that entire relationship between the father and the son was the emotional center of that movie. And I couldn't imagine that it was removed, and when I saw it, it was mind-blowing. So thank you for having created it so that we could get that part. My question is about Shakespearean diction. Going back to the beginning, you scared me. You almost thought you answered my question in the beginning. There's been a lot of research in the last 50 years or so about the way that Shakespearean English was spoken, and with what you've done with Ali, I wonder what give you comments on how you think about that when you're creating your version of the character. Like, does the speech really...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Back to your emotional content and all that, and how you feel about that.
Yeah, I think what the character says and how they say it, that's half the journey, that's half the battle. You know, and I love analyzing the script, right? And if you've got a great writer, like we had Chris Terrio and like Nick Pizzolatto, who were True Detective, our showrunner / writer for True Detective, there's nothing arbitrary on the page. Everything has a purpose, everything has a place. And when you dissect those things, you can really mine like the gems that exist within a script. Same thing with Shakespeare. I mean, Shakespeare, he's touted as being one of the most, he had something like, it's either like 1,000 or 10,000 words or something like that to the English dictionary. Apparently, before Shakespeare used such words as bedroom, the word was never recorded, was never written down, anything of that nature. The word assassination, they say he made up. Also, I believe the word alligator was the Shakespeare, yeah. So, a lot. The language is number one for me. It's just what I'm drawn to. And then finding the physicality for everything as well.
You know, Ray, I make up a lot of words myself, but nobody ever adds them to a dictionary. So, that's, I feel like, something to Shakespeare.
Yeah, I think it was either 1,000 or 10,000. I can't remember the exact number. I want to say 1,000 words, but...
Still a lot. That's still even a lot. On the low
it's
end.
More than I've got. I'm trying to get bored from the dictionary. You know what I mean?
Hi there.
I was just wondering, what was your favorite role to play and why?
My favorite role? Ever? You know, what's weird is, like, I really loved the things I did in high school. Like, we did some, like, really cool musical theater stuff. My first one, I think, was the thing that really got me excited. I got to play the wolf in Into the Woods years ago. Yeah. That was the thing that really launched it for me. I found a sense of community with the people that you're doing the show with. You're a sophomore in high school and you're just like coming around having fun, but that's when it was like, okay, this was the spark. You know, this is kind of what like set it all off, and I will never forget it.
Thank you.
Hello.
Next question.
Hello.
Yeah. You're up.
Is that Duma?
Yes.
All right, Duma, what's up, baby? We met earlier today.
It's cool down. I want to say thanks for coming out to Orlando, by the way. I've been getting sci-fi against Cyborg since Smallville and Teen Titans. And shout out to the Justice Con people who've been spearheading the Justice League back in 2020. I'm curious for you, is there anyone, whether it be in movies, music, activism, who really inspires you? Because I can only speak for myself, I'm a Marvel fan, Chadwick Boseman forever will be just a light to me. And I'm just curious for your point of view, who's inspired you during this year of 2020 going forward?
You know, I spent a lot of time in 2020, and I'm sure everybody has. I mean, if you weren't thinking deeply about things in the year 2020, I think the year may have been wasted for some folks. For me, it's about the people who are doing it like right now in the moment. You know, there are a lot of folks who are working to make sure that everyday people have access to food and healthcare and education. Those are the people that really inspire me. You know, and no matter what side of the political aisle you find yourself on, you know, our world and our country is really hurting right now, and people need relief, especially now. So it's the folks that are pushing for those sorts of agendas that I'm like, that really inspire me. Because it's not easy to do, and it oftentimes sure feels like a thankless task, but it's probably one of the most important things. So.
Well, thank you. Shout out to you for being here, Aaron. Good job being host today.
Oh.
And shout out to all the interpreters who've been helping out. So congratulations. Peace out. We're back.
Thank you.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Doing well.
I want to say thank you very much for saying if you had to choose to be another superhero, it would be The Flash. I got him on my lanyard. First of all, I have to ask you, just straightforward, what was your favorite scene to shoot in the Justice League with Zack Snyder?
Some of my favorite stuff was actually the stuff we like shot at nighttime. There was the scene outside of the ATM when Cyborg is depositing the money, and I was so excited. I'm like, oh man, I get to stand in the rain. This is going to be cool. It's going to be like dark and moody. And then you realize standing in the rain means just standing in the rain. Like, and it was freezing cold. It wasn't, that was like a rain sheet. And when I'm in the hoodie, it's basically like this thing that creates rain on a film set, right? And so whenever I'm in the hoodie and sweatpants in the movie, that's the only time I'm wearing anything like practical, like anything bulky underneath. Now the problem is that that suit is kind of made of the same stuff that Superman's suit is made out of, but it doesn't have like that water resistant skin, so it would just like absorb all the water. So by the time we got done take number two, I'm literally just like sloshing around in the suit, trying to walk down the street. So, but it's like things like, it's like really silly stuff like that that really gets me, because I'm like, oh, this is going to look cool, but man, I feel really dumb right now.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going? I was just wondering what part of Victor Stone as a character that you would say you relate to the most?
The resilience, for sure. That's something that I at least admire in him, and I'm trying to get maintain as much of that as I possibly can. He gets a lot of stuff thrown at him. And rather than letting it drag him down, you know, he still, at the end of the day, finds it within himself to try to save the world and to try to help people he does not know. And that's a really admirable quality. Ultimately, also the father-son relationship between Victor and Silas was very special to me. My father was not around when I was growing up, so that's something that resonates really deeply for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people out there, you know, one of the tragedies is that, you know, Victor's father is around, but he's, you know, emotionally absent, which can feel, probably, it can feel in some ways worse, I'm sure, for a person, you know, to have someone there and not actually there. So it's those sorts of aspects that I think resonates with me, and I think grounds the character in a reality that we all recognize. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, just a quick detour. You are in this upcoming miniseries, Women of the Movement, correct? And powerhouse production team behind this, too, including Jay-Z is one of the producers, I believe.
Yeah, Jay-Z, Will Smith.
Will Smith.
Yeah, Rick Kaplan. Yeah.
I want you to talk a little bit about this, but also about your character of Gene. Speaking of, you know, someone was a father figure. Yeah.
So Women of the Movement is a limited series. It's going to be an anthology. And each season is going to focus on a different influential woman in the civil rights movement. The first season is going to be about Mamie Till Mobley, who's the mother of Emmett Till. Now, the story is going to be deep, it's going to be heart-wrenching, it's going to be powerful, and it's going to be necessary, especially for where we're at right now. We had a great team work on this project, Arissa Jo Sarar, who is our writer slash showrunner, Gina Prince-Bythewood, who did our pilot episode, and I believe is also executive producing on the series. And I play a character named Gene Mobley, who, if Emmett Till had lived, Gene Mobley would have ultimately been his stepfather. But when the story begins, he's the boyfriend of Mamie Till, who is with her through the tragedy that ensues and acts as a support system. In one of the most powerful, like, instances of love that I could imagine, and that's being there with somebody through a tragic situation and really being a rock even when things get hard. That's kind of where the character lies. I don't want to give away too much because you should watch it. It's actually going to be coming out at the top of next year. It's going to be on ABC, and I think it's something that people are going to, I think it's something that people are really going to really, really go nuts over.
Yeah, it seems like a really strong project. Looking forward to it. Yeah. Looks like Judge Dredd. Hi.
Hey, it's Judge Dredd. How you doing? Good. Hey, I got a question. What would you say is, like, you know, the most kind of bat crazy surreal point in your career? Like, you know, seeing yourself in a, like, you know, CGI'd up in a costume, like, in an actual picture, or, you know, in front of fans? Like, what point where you're just, like, you just, it's a real moment where you're just, like, whoa, you know, kind of shifted your whole mind?
I mean, I'm in that moment, I think, every time I do a convention. I mean, I still can't believe that this is my, like, community. And I think it's because I literally, like, you will not find a bigger fan of these characters that is also in these movies besides myself. Like, I can't imagine it. Like, I've lived and breathed and ate comic book characters growing up as a kid, and while I did not have comic books specifically, it was like all the TV shows, the movies, the cartoons, anything I could get my hands on. Crazy debates about, you know, who would win in a fight between Batman and Wolverine, and like all these just really silly things that I remember really well to this day. I think for me, seeing like the toy for the first time, I was like, okay, this is special, this is unique. And I actually gave the first toy that I ever got to my buddy Chima, who was my stand-in for Justice League for the original production in 2016. And I told him, I said, well, listen, you've been standing in for me this whole time. Here's my figure. It'll hopefully stand for you. You know, put it on the windowsill. And
the action figure treatment is amazing.
That's crazy.
By the way, Batman or Wolverine?
Batman, of course. Big magnet. Yeah. You, Bruce Wayne's got it.
Considering the crowd, okay. I think Wolverine. But, you know, but, yes, hi. Over here.
Hi, sorry. First of all, thank you for a True Detective and not canceling this event. And just... and in general, just being a hero of mine, honestly. Because everything you've done, just putting your whole career out there, you've done so much that I can only aspire to be as honest and just being as good as you as a person. So just thank you for just being you. And
thank you, appreciate that.
My big question is, when it comes to theater, film, and television, is there like a character when it comes to maybe fiction or real life, historically, that you would want to portray when it comes to those sequences?
Between TV, film, and theater, you said?
Yes, sir.
I'm not exactly sure right now. I might have to get back to you on that. For me, it's when I finish a project, I usually like to take some time away and think about what that process was and go, okay, well, what else exists out there? Because I don't necessarily want to play the same thing, you know, if I can help it. Not to say that you're not going to find characters that have similarities, because that's unavoidable at a certain point, but I'm not sure. I want to take my time and really just see what's out there in the world first.
Thanks. Now, my friend, you were just over there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you do me a favor? Can we get through a couple other people, and if at the end we can swing back by to you? Okay. Cool. Thank you. Just hang in the back of that line, okay, so we can get through some other folks first. Hello.
Good afternoon. My sister is a social studies professor, and she does guest lectures for minority superheroes, and she had a question she wanted me to ask, so she may coach you in a future lecture. But since you were a superhero fan growing up, how did it affect you, or were you aware so much of the lack of Afro-American superheroes, and how did that affect you and impress you in life?
Well, for me, I think I grew up right in the sweet spot where Blade was just coming into the picture. Wesley Snipes' Blade was like everything for me. And also with Spawn, I remember watching Michael Jai White in that growing up as well. So I felt, at least on the movie side, I felt like I was seen, I was there, right? Insofar as the animated series goes, I didn't really notice it that much on that side growing up. You know, I feel like kids are maybe a lot less aware of race, or at least maybe in the 90s that was the case. I'm sure, you know, it's very much a big part of the conversation now. But, you know, those were the characters that I looked up to. I hope that answers the question.
Did you have any impressions, though, personally, about the lack of that?
I didn't really experience as much of a lack, because I think I resonated with those characters so strongly. You know what I mean? Like, at Blade posters all over my room, I was like, well, this one is enough for me because he was such an awesome character, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Back in, you know, growing up now as an adult and seeing the lack of representation, and even seeing the lack of representation with respect to the two different versions of Justice League, the theatrical version and Zack Snyder's Justice League, which actually reinstated all of the people of color that were removed from the original, from the theatrical version. It's like, that's a completely different subject. I talk to you now as an adult about all those things very specifically, but as a kid, I don't think I would have registered it as much.
Thank you. Yeah, late Marvel movie before the MCU. So.
Yeah, started it all off.
Hi.
Two things. When am I going to get my invitation to join the Justice League? I've been waiting for a while. And can I get a booyah?
To answer the second one, I'll forego the booyah, but I appreciate you asking. The first question, I will say, you got to take up the crew. I think Bruce is fielding applications right now, so you may want to...
Okay.
He said there was room for more at the table. You know, God help us. Room for more.
Thank you. All right, so guys, we have only a couple minutes left, so I want to get through as many as possible, keep it super short, and we will try to get through, especially because we have kids in the line. Hi.
Have you read Superman vs. Muhammad Ali, and what do you think of it?
I have read it, yeah. Friends actually bought Muhammad Ali vs. Superman from me years ago. I liked it. I mean, I think they do this weird thing where it's always no one wins, or it's always some sort of like red herring, or there's some sort of trick to the fight. And I get why they do that, but you know, there's not really very many public figures who have fought Superman and quote unquote won the fight. So I thought it was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
Would you ever take on a role in the MCU?
Oh yeah, I want to be like Blade's cousin. Butterknife. Yeah.
Cyborg.
It went well. I was only there for maybe a day or two. We just shot that one sequence, the nightmare sequence at the end of the film, but I had a blast. It was great being able to finish shooting everything to do with Zack Snyder's Justice League with Zack and some of the old crew. That's a really special memory. I said, I'm going to carry that with me. Like, that's colored all the negative and all the stuff that happened with that experience, knowing that that's the final sort of way I'll remember being on set. Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, make sure.
You got to work with two amazing screen dads, Joe Morton and Mahershala Ali. Any tips or advice that they gave you when you were working with them?
For Joe, he said, listen, you know, it ebbs and it flows. Everybody's career does. There'll be years where you work, there'll be years where you don't. But the years that you do, make sure you get in as much as you can, because you never know when you don't know when that next sort of ebb is going to happen. For Mahershala, there was a lot of just like funny conversation, but you know, no advice per se. But it was just great to like watch him just interact with people. He has such a generous spirit. I think I took a lot from from him without him knowing, if that makes any sense.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can text him now and say, cast me as Butterknife.
There you go.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? Are you hopeful the upcoming merger with Discovery will mend the bridge one day with you and Warner Brothers?
I can't really speak on that. I don't really know too much about the inner workings of corporate mergers, but you never know. I mean, they said the Snyder Cut didn't exist. They said that was impossible. They said all this for years and years. So, you know, give it time. If there's an appetite for it, if people want it, eventually, you know, I think it's possible.
Thank you. The arc of history is long. Hi, yes.
Curious when playing Cyborg, what's your favorite line? Like, what's the coolest one, like, in your head? You're just like, oh yeah, this is a cool line.
It's the line, I'm always dressed.
Thank you. And I think we have two final questions over here. Hi.
Will there be a Justice League 3?
Well, maybe. We gotta get the Justice League 2 first.
Good question. Thank you. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Out of all the characters you've played, is there any life lesson you've learned?
I would say, yeah. Definitely, with playing Muhammad Ali, it's being able to stand it up for what you believe is right, no matter what the cost or the consequence may be. I think that's something that I've really taken with me, and hopefully I'll carry it with me, you know?
Thank you. All right, MegaCon, we are out of time. Before we go, please, a round of applause for Blue Sun Interpreting and taking care of us for this panel and all the panels. And also, MegaCon, you guys are great. This guy is great. Make some noise for Mr. Rick.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.